Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Monday, October 6th, 2014. The South Sudan peace talks adjourned once again, with the government blaming the rebels for lack of progress.
The protocol, which was signed by the IGAD heads of state, including President Salva Kiir Mayardit, had the position of Prime Minister already in it. So as a government, that was endorsed in the protocol. It was the rebel leader who refused to sign that protocol, in which there is the position of a Prime Minister.
And rebel spokesman says the government does not really want peace.
We know already the government has received some, but again, continuous flow of the arms is making also the government is so arrogant that they are not listening.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan peace talks in Ethiopia have adjourned once again with no substantial results. A South Sudan government official describes the latest break in the on-again-off-again peace talks as a mere consultative recess. South Sudan Foreign Minister Barnaba Marial Benjamin says negotiators used the break to consult with their principals on some of the sticking issues. The rebels have accused IGAD of being biased in favor of President Kiir. Barnaba tells VOA's James Batty negotiators will return to the table by October 15th.
What has happened is that the negotiators have been asked to go back to their principals to consult on some of the issues where there is some concurrence. Some people seem to agree on certain points, so they will have to go back and consult with the principals, and they will resume on the 15th of this month.
So what are the sticking points that have caused this latest delay, I say, about forming the interim government? Their disagreement or what?
No, the issue of the interim government is not an issue. The interim government will be formed once you have a political solution. There must be a political agreement so that you have an interim government to implement what has been agreed upon. So there's no problem about the interim government now. In principle, that has been accepted by the government, and there's no question about that. The issue is let us have an agreement. As you remember, we had the Comprehensive Peace Agreement, after which the government of national unity was formed. You cannot form an interim government without a political agreement.
The sources quoting your negotiating team in Addis Ababa are saying, I think the disagreement has to do with now the powers of the Prime Minister and the powers of the presidency. What is the truth here?
Well, if there are those issues, then you need to consult with the principals. It means that they have no problem with the interim government and with the positions of a president or a prime minister. Because as you remember, the protocol which was signed by the IGAD heads of state, including President Salva Kiir Mayardit, had the position of prime minister already in it. So as a government, that was endorsed in the protocol. It was the rebel leader who refused to sign that protocol, in which there is the position of a prime minister. So I think they are going back to consult on some of those issues, the nitty-gritty of what is connected, what the prime minister is to do, and that sort of thing. So really, it is a consultative break. They go and consult with the principals on areas they think that it is the principals who should take decisions on those, or be informed in how they could proceed. So I think this is normal in any negotiations.
Mr. Foreign Minister, is it really fair to always blame the rebels, or is the blame on both sides?
No, you cannot blame the government that has signed a protocol which formed the basis for negotiation. It is the rebels who refused to sign that protocol. It is the rebels who are violating the cessation of hostilities in the ground. And so the government sometimes is blamed because they know it is the constitutional legal authority and they are supposed to lead the process. But I can assure you, facts on the ground indicate rebels have a little bit been very intransigent indeed.
That's Barnaba Marial Benjamin, South Sudan's foreign minister, speaking with VOA's James Batty earlier today. Leaders and residents of South Sudan's Warrap State are calling on South Sudan's warring parties to end the nearly 10-month conflict. The call was made on Friday as the state marked the International Day of Peace. Santino Manur has more for VOA from the Warrap State capital, Kwajok.
Brother! Business came to a standstill in Kwajok Town on Friday. Thousands of people from all walks of life sang songs and marched from Salami Square to Kwajok Freedom Square to mark the International Day of Peace. Participant Andrew Makeratim says South Sudanese have suffered for too long.
People of South Sudan, wherever they are, whether outside this country or those who are here, their leaders, the soldiers, people have to lay down their arms and we have to go for peace together.
20-year-old Kwajok resident from Abia, Ajay Jokwal, appealed to the leaders of the two warring parties to set aside their personal interests and strive to restore peace in the country. She says so many innocent lives and properties have been lost already, and that it is time leaders make peace rather than make comments that could escalate the conflict.
When we are stable with no crisis, then we will stay in peace. There is no fear, there is no run, there is no dying randomly.
Another Kwajok resident, Salpa Mading, appealed to government and rebels leaders to reach a peace deal so tens of thousands of young people displaced from their homes can return to their villages and go back to school.
When there is peace, there is education. When there is no peace, there is no education and there is no development.
Warabi State Social Development Minister Victoria Tito says the South Sudanese people can also make a difference by having an open mind towards other ethnic communities.
We are committed that we need peace. We need to consider our attitude towards each other. We need to value any other person as a human being like you.
Alfred Wane, who represents the UN Children's Agency UNICEF in Warab, called on state authorities to address intercommunal conflict which has kept many children out of schools.
We know Warab is in peace compared to other states, but also we know that Solye East County has numerous conflicts within itself and its neighboring county. It is the best interest of Warab State to see that conflicts in Solye East are minimized to allow the children to go to school. Right now, I'm speaking, learning has been disrupted in five schools in Solye East.
The UN General Assembly has declared International Peace Day as a day for strengthening the ideals of peace both within and among all nations around the world. The day is typically observed on September 21st, but Warabi State authorities say they do not have funds to organize a celebration until now. For VOA News, I'm Santino Manuda Yuel in Kwajok, Warabi State.
South Sudan's former defense minister says a military solution is not the best option for ending the political crisis in the country. Majak Dagot says President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar have shown little interest in seeking a peaceful solution to the conflict, which has polarized South Sudanese communities for months. He says the people of South Sudan should be given the chance to find a lasting solution to a conflict which has threatened tens of thousands of lives across the country.
IGAD initiative has achieved the agreement on the cessation of hostilities, but unfortunately this is not being respected. It is not being implemented. You have heard of protocol, and the protocol has actually generated roadblocks that must be carefully navigated. I'm actually talking of the need to construct a bypass around some of these roadblocks.
And what are some of these roadblocks? Would you mind to share with us?
Well, these roadblocks, in the first place, I would say the first bottleneck is the fact that the kind of leadership architecture that came in the protocol is not acceptable to all the parties. It gives unprecedented power to the president.
That is President Salva Kiir.
Well, it goes without saying that the protocol is affirming the current president of the republic to continue as the head of state and the head of government through the interim period.
And other people have started making noise, including South Sudan's Minister of Information, that the mediators are not credible. They are actually calling for the relocation of the talks from Ethiopia to Kenya. Now, the former political detainees are part and parcel of this negotiation process. What is your take on that?
Well, my personal view is that this is just a gimmick to prolong the negotiation and to prolong the suffering of the people of South Sudan. It's just a mere forum shopping on the part of Juba government, and this should not be allowed. Because the protocol that IGAD heads of states signed a few weeks ago has sharpened Juba appetite to continue to put in place more bottlenecks, to put in place more roadblocks. We want to say that we have to deal with the protocol, work out a bypass that is acceptable to all parties, and navigate our way through to find a durable solution to this crisis.
Talking about solution to this crisis, if given an opportunity to resolve this conflict today and now, what would be some of the proposals that you will put on the table to bring an end to this conflict?
If we are given an opportunity to map out a solution to the crisis of governance in South Sudan, we will implement the program that we issued recently, a 53-page program. It has 11 programs that address the issues of conflict, the issues of financial and economic governance, security sector transformation, how to manage natural resources, justice and accountability, issues of nation building, peace, consolidation of peace, and all that.
There are different camps now in South Sudan. You have the political parties forum, you have the faith-based groups in Addis, you have civil society groups, you have your group, you have the SPLM in opposition. And people are saying when you're negotiating with a lot of people on the table, when they are saying when the table is crowded, it is not easy to find a solution. Is that what is going out in Addis?
Well,
in Bahardar, sorry, excuse me.
Well, it's the nature of the conflict itself. As I said from the very beginning, the multidimensionality of the crisis requires that you must have a multi-stakeholder approach to resolving it, because you're not handling one cause of the problem. And every party around the table brings a perspective, and that perspective actually helps in promoting conflict resolution in South Sudan and ensuring a permanent peace, a peace that has our ownership as South Sudanese.
That's South Sudan's former defense minister, Majak Dagot. He was speaking to me in our studios here on Friday. Majak, along with 10 senior SPLM members, were accused by President Kiir of attempting to overthrow his government. The SPLM in opposition says very little has been achieved in the just adjourned peace talks, saying the more important issues were not even addressed because government negotiators refused to talk about them. Senior rebel official Hussein Marnyot says, unfortunately, Juba is not ready to accept a power-sharing deal with the SPLM in opposition. VOA fellow Lucy Pony has the details.
The Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, which had been mediating the discussions in Ethiopia, adjourned the talks on Sunday. IGAD states in a communique, quote, "Substantial progress that has been made in determining arrangements necessary for implementing a transitional government." But Hussein Marnyot, the Secretary for Humanitarian Affairs and an opposition delegate at the talks, says what they actually agreed on was very minor.
Frankly speaking, there is no progress because the issues that actually we agreed upon are not actually the most essential issues. Very, very minor issues that actually we managed to agree upon. These are things like the transitional period that is actually 30 months, which is 2.5 years, and issues to do with the decision-making mechanism in the transitional government of national unity.
Nyuat says issues of significance that still remain unaddressed include the causes of the war, the leadership structure of government, the system of governance, such as whether or not federalism should be introduced, and security reforms. In late August, IGAD gave the two warring parties a 45-day deadline to reach an agreement on the formation of a transitional government of national unity. As for the leadership issue, Nuot says the two sides still disagree on the appointment of a prime minister, what his or her powers would be, and who would be head of the government. He says the government proposes installing a prime minister who would have no powers, something the rebels oppose. Nuot says it is unlikely that they will reach any concrete agreements anytime soon as the deadline approaches next week.
The government is so arrogant, as the region is a witness. They are not ready to discuss the major issues. Whenever we come, we work on the smaller issues with a lot of disagreements. We bracket them. And even if they report this to IGAD, still they go and talk also very aggressively to the mediators that are not ready to give in any compromise.
Nuot says the IGAD proposal should be a guideline for discussions between the two parties. Nuot says the fact that the government can purchase arms abroad gives them an advantage in the ongoing fighting, so they don't have an incentive to compromise. He suggests putting the country's oil revenues in a frozen account until peace is reached. He says pressure from the international community should continue so that peace is achieved. For VOA News, I'm Lucy Pony in Washington.
Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaks to VOA on the Ebola crisis.
I would want the people in West Africa to know that Ebola is real. Ebola kills. Early detection and prompt treatment can save lives. And I'm asking our people not to victimize or stigmatize survivors. Ebola is a challenge, but together we'll all be able to overcome it.
That was Sia Nyama Karoma, the First Lady of Sierra Leone, speaking to VOA Africa on the Ebola crisis.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, the fight against Ebola in West Africa continues. That story is coming up next.
You don't want to miss VOA's South Sudan in Focus. You can hear us on one of our FM affiliate stations around the country or on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan. In Juba, listen to South Sudan in Focus at 8 p.m. on 93.5. You can also find us on shortwave at 11995, 13870, and 15180 kilohertz. Or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
do you think the international community could have done more in the fight against Ebola?
If Ebola outbreak was in Britain or maybe USA, those countries would have done whatever they could have done to contain Ebola. But Ebola is in Africa. See what they're saying is, okay, they tried a vaccine and it ended. You're trying to make a new one. So I think they're taking a laissez-faire attitude just because it is hitting Africa.
I cannot blame the international community because it still have time to do more, because Ebola is still there. So they still have a lot of job to do. Try their best to finish the problem we have, because it is worldwide.
I think international community have got a lot of powers to resolve, especially the case of Ebola. But because of lack of education to such societies, people have ended up to being affected by the Ebola.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. A group of international aid agencies have warned of a possible famine in South Sudan by next year, as harvests have been exhausted and fighting is expected to worsen with the coming dry season. VOA's Gabe Joslow reports from Juba.
In the joint report called From Crisis to Catastrophe, aid agencies warn that more than 1 million people could face severe hunger in South Sudan in the first 3 months of 2015. The agencies say violence expected in the coming dry season could put further pressure on populations already suffering from the nearly 10-month conflict between government forces and opposition militia. Kathleen Rutledge is the country director for Tear Fund, one of the organizations behind the report.
There won't be a harvest. There won't be the same level of harvest in October, November as there should be.
and they're going to be facing 6-7 months of dry season where food is gone, where assets are gone, markets have been closed, traders have been killed, roads are blocked.
The report says more than 1.5 million people have already fled their homes as a result of the conflict, which is rooted in a political rivalry between South Sudan's president and former vice president. Aid agencies say a humanitarian response alone is not enough and are calling on warring parties to enforce a ceasefire. In a release accompanying the report, Tariq Rebel, country lead for the British aid organization Oxfam, said this is a man-made crisis, not one caused by the vagaries of the weather. Aid agencies warned of looming famine in South Sudan earlier this year, but Rutledge says a concerted humanitarian effort has helped to relieve suffering and avoid that scenario for now.
Right now, people are expecting us to already be in the famine stage, but it has been staved off. Right now, death and suffering of children could be at a higher pitch than it is. So we can prevent this.
The United Nations says $400 million is needed to meet food security needs in South Sudan this year. Gabe Joslow, VOA News, Juba.
From Juba, we move to West Africa. The head of World Hope International says Sierra Leone has a shortage of ambulances and isolation centers, making it more difficult to contain Ebola outbreak. The virus has killed more than 600 people in the country. VOA's Joe DiCapua reports.
WHI President John Lyon says the Ebola virus continues its rapid spread in Sierra Leone.
There's about 5 new infections per hour there. So the rate of infection is greatly outstripping the number of beds they have to hold patients.
He says some hospitals have ambulances, some don't. So people often take taxis, which contribute to the spread of the disease. WHI has donated some of its vehicles to be used as ambulances.
We really need to have people who are trained in infection control to be able to move people who have Ebola around. That's a major problem across the country.
Lyon says Sierra Leoneans are scared and hope the outbreak ends soon. The disease has forced them to change their behavior.
Culturally, Sierra Leoneans are very, very friendly people. You shake hands a lot. Now they're conscious not to touch each other, which is also very odd for a country that's so friendly.
World Hope International has been asked to provide borehole water wells and sanitation facilities for the treatment centers.
It's a massive order, so we're going to try and fill it as quickly as possible. We've been doing that already. We've been working on the McKinney Hospital. Just last week, we put in a submersible pump, and then we're drilling a new water well for McKinney Hospital. That hospital, just in the last month, has had 100 cases of Ebola.
WHI has also provided rain pavilions at Ebola checkpoints.
They've set up these quarantines across the country, but alongside of the quarantines, they have these Ebola checkpoints. Everybody that goes through the checkpoint has to get stopped. They have to get out of their car. Everybody gets their temperature checked that way. When the Ebola outbreak hit, it was during the rainy season. We're just now starting to come out of the rainy season. But in the rainy season, everybody was having to stand out in the rain waiting for their temperature to get checked. So we were providing some rain pavilions so that this process could take place under a dry roof.
The Sierra Leone government is conducting a massive education campaign about Ebola, something that was rarely mentioned before the outbreak. Much of that is being done through radio and going door to door. Recently, the government asked people to stay home for 3 days, while 30,000 volunteers went to homes to raise awareness about the disease.
That was a good campaign. It was an unusual one, but it did provide some good results. It helped the government identify where the cases are spreading the most. One of the problems in Sierra Leone is that the confidence in the medical system has collapsed so much that people are now afraid to go to Ebola centers or the hospitals to get treatment. And so what was happening is that people are just staying home and not going out to get treatment. As a result, they were just continuing to spread the virus further and further.
Despite the international effort to provide medical supplies, there continues to be a huge need in Sierra Leone for such things as rubber gloves, masks, and protection suits.
It's coming in a rush now. So it's coming in by the airport, coming in by the seaport. Once it gets there, we're supporting nonprofits to get it from the ports to the hospitals where they need it. We have 2 10-ton trucks we're working with and a trailer. We have other smaller trucks that we're using to get the supplies out to the places where they actually need it.
When asked how the Ebola outbreak got to this extent, Lyon blames the slow international response. The first case occurred in Guinea last December, but he says the local and international communities failed to adequately respond until July. The medical aid group Doctors Without Borders had warned last March that the outbreak had reached epidemic levels. Also, other outbreaks, such as those in the DRC, occurred in remote, isolated areas. In West Africa, the population is much denser and more mobile. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Here are some of today's news headlines with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Dam.
Thanks, John. After more than a week of protests that paralyzed parts of Hong Kong, student leaders have established a framework with government officials to discuss their political reform demands. The breakthrough comes as intense pro-democracy demonstrations subsided today, allowing government workers back into their offices. Lester Shum of the Hong Kong Federation of Students set the terms of any future talks between city leadership and the protesters in today's meeting with a government official. Kurdish fighters have blocked Islamic State militants from taking the Syrian border town of Kobani, killing at least 16 insurgents but sustaining 11 casualties of their own. The British-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said Kurdish forces repelled the Islamic State advance, keeping control of the strategic high ground known as the Mishtanur Hill overlooking Kobani, also known as Ain el-Arab. Last night's fighting extended into today. The Islamic State militants had seized part of the hill on Saturday, but U.S.-led airstrikes halted their surge. News service video released today shows fighters believed to be Islamic militants raising a black flag over the hillside adjacent to Kobani. And finally, Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta says he will obey a summons to report on Wednesday to the International Criminal Court at The Hague, making him the first sitting head of state to appear before the court. Mr. Kenyatta and his deputy, William Ruto, are charged with crimes against humanity for allegedly orchestrating the 2007 post-election violence that killed an estimated 1,000 people. Last week's summons to The Hague came as a surprise to many Kenyans, more accustomed now to news that the prosecution's case against their president is weak and on the verge of collapse. And that's a look at some of today's top news stories. I'm Carol Van Dam.
That's our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song No More War by Ras Corby.
All over the world right now, seeing Rasta citizens. We need a global love, you know, and a global solution, and must be a conclusion. Sure, Rastafari, just stop the war. No more war in Africa, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war in America, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia, we gotta keep it nice and neat, y'all. Our people suffering around the world today, they're trying to find a solution. We look around and nowhere to hide, not even a single place to run. How can you say you're leading the world without love? So how can you say you're leading the world without peace? Circumstances meet people along the way, they need someone to turn to. Only Jah has the solution. No mankind has it on his own. We were creating the image and the likeness of Jah. Mankind, don't try to fool yourself. Wake up in the morning, you see the sun down. And even times the rain will fall. Can you tell me what the mystical vibration you see in your heart? No more war in Africa, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in the Middle East, the people are fighting the peace. No more war in America, the people gotta live up to Jah. No more war in Asia, we gotta keep it nice and neat. Can't you tell me how much love you have for this world and Creator? Take a look at
to let the children bound the street. Standing as the future generation.
We have been listening to Russ Corby with the song No More War. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Rise about yourself, stand up, give them love, stand up for the future generation. Ha, ha, ha.